they were like at school. They'd sit down, they'd be like, oh, this is great. And you start drawing it and you'd take them on a journey. You know, you'd start drawing the funnel, and I would have myself, the head of BI, and our product person, who, by the way, had a PhD in astrophysics, which is crazy. We'd all together do this pitch. Honestly, they were like, that's the best pitch I've ever had, because you've taken me on the journey and I completely understand what you're trying to achieve and I want to go with you.
Today, I'm talking with and learning from Phil Coxon, Managing Director at Breathe HR, Rota Geeks, and Elmo UK. So he's brought together three very different HR businesses. They cover customers from onesie twosie up to thousands. So he's got that challenge to deal with. He's owned by private equity firm K1. So he has some growth ambitions onwards to 50 million in the near term. And now he's at about 150 employees. So fantastic conversation. I didn't think we'd end up talking about AI, honestly, but Phil has some really great stories to tell about how AI is impacting the way the team goes to market, how they do customer experience, how they look at doing development. So that's fantastic. He's taking on from the success he had with Criteo, where they would, as a sales methodology, co-create with a client using a whiteboard, take an insight, co-create a solution. And he's using AI to enable his sales teams to do that at Breathe. So fantastic conversation there with Phil. This is somebody who was a diving instructor. He's even taught one of the Apollo astronauts to dive. And now through his work at Criteo and then Mindbody, where obviously everybody went from the office to working from home, we get into, should he work from home? Should it be fully remote? And maybe the Breathe struck a really good balance there, and we chat with Phil about that. So this is fantastic conversation with a fellow Geordie. So what's not to like?
Good morning. My name's Phil Coxon. I am the Managing Director of Breathe, Elmo UK, and a business we recently acquired called Rotogeek.
And Phil, how long have you been at Breathe?
I have been there just over 6 months now.
Okay. Why did you come to Breathe?
Interesting business, I would say. The space they're in, the backers they have. So the space they're in is HR software. And let's be honest, that affects, what, 34 million people in the country who have a job. So I think that's a worthy area. And there's a lot of regulation coming into that area as well. And I think that's causing some disruption. And you've also got other facilities, like sort of not directly in our space, but some adjoining areas, like the government's really pushing to make tax digital, which means if you're a business with revenues of 50K and soon to be 30K, you need to file a digital tax report. You know, so obviously there's a lot of companies that offer that service. But I suspect that will drive people to start looking at how they house the data, you know, and then looking at GDPR and, you know, should we really be using a spreadsheet to monitor holidays, you know, when we've got to put all this data together and put it into, you know, a digital tax return. So I think, you know, when you look at that, the broader regulation in the industry, and just, you know, how important employee rights are, you know, workers' mental health, all of that stuff, I think it's super important space. So that drove me. And also we're PE backed by a private equity firm called K1. And my interaction with them was really good. Having worked with a similar size business called Vista Equity Partners, these are massive private equity firms based in the West Coast of America, but very professional, really want to help you succeed. Obviously, the flip side is they push you really hard because they want to be successful. I enjoyed the interview process. I'm excited about the business and the team. And I think all of that was why I was very excited to join.
Phil, so you're diving into some of your backstory then. What is it that you've done that puts you in a position where that this exciting opportunity is a great fit for you? What are some of the other businesses that you've scaled or scale-ups that you've been involved in that give you the skills and the insight to take this on?
Yeah, so it's interesting, isn't it? You look back on your career and I think it's sometimes a bit of luck and it's a bit of timing. I was working at Microsoft and I just closed their biggest deal. I was working for the MSN part, the online part, and I just closed their biggest deal in history. But as somebody pointed out, you know, whatever we did on the online side was literally an accounting error for what they generated from the software side. So you never quite got the visibility that you hoped for. And so I felt a little bit demoralized when I was working there. So this business came along that my friend who had worked with at Microsoft had gone to called Criteo. And I'd never heard of this company, but they were disrupting the advertising space. And my history previously had been in advertising. And they did this thing called retargeting. And retargeting, uh-huh. in its simplest terms, was you go on a site like Marks & Spencer's, you look at some stuff, and then you go on to the newspaper site, let's say The Guardian, and the ad you see will be the stuff you looked at plus other recommended products. And this, I'll be honest, initially freaked people out a bit, but actually worked incredibly well because it was so tailored to what they wanted to see. We were generating click-through rates the same as search, and search was just, you know, the dominant player at this point, probably in, 2011 or so. This business was super interesting, and I came in and we started getting into the data. And what we discovered in this business was we were absolutely smashing our customers' return on investment targets. So we started doing the maths and we were like, well, if you gave us more money, obviously the performance would reduce, but it would reduce down to what your expectation would be. And so we put this message out there, and I'd say about 80% of the customers agreed. And so we started scaling this business enormously quickly. And when I joined, it was probably, you know, 100 or so people. It was doing about 30 to 50 million in revenue. And we started inputting this data. We started galvanizing the team, and we started just really growing. And I got these opportunities within there where they were like, well, what you've done in the UK, can you do that in America? So I moved to Manhattan and I ran the North America team. And then they're like, could you do that globally? And then by this point, we'd IPO'd. We were a 2.3 billion revenue company with 2,500 employees. And there I was in a global role running all of the strategy for the business. And I think it's just one of those things where the timing worked, the product was great. I feel like I took advantage of that by just trying to execute really well, perform really well. And I grew with the company. And it was an incredible ride. It was absolutely amazing. I mean, getting to live in New York was awesome. I had teams, you know, latterly all over the world. So I got to understand the culture and business in Asia compared to the US and obviously a French-based company as well. So working there.
Sending somebody sensible to a foreign territory, certainly my career at Rackspace and at Pier One was, I was that sort of adult in the region. European B2B businesses are incredibly difficult to take global, much easier to go from the US the other way. How important was it to send you there versus hire somebody over there?
Definitely got that right. And I'd argue it's even harder to go to the US if you're a French-based company. You know, I'll just mention holidays alone, right? They don't jive on holidays, right? The US takes a couple of weeks. The French basically will take August off. And we had moments where you get an out of office and it would go around to someone else, to someone else, to someone else, back to the original person. That didn't go down well in the States. They did not enjoy that because they were like, you know, they lived life slightly differently. So I went over there. They'd had two people previously from Europe try to run that business. And I'll tell you now, there is something about the UK-US relationship, right? We get on with each other. We understand each other. I think there's a bit of luck with our accent goes down well there, you know, and they'll tend to listen to you. And for some reason, you know, you'd have CEOs and you'd have CMOs and they'd be really intent on hearing you because you're a bit different. What I love there is they take sales very differently to the how you do in Europe, right? It's a proper career job. Generally, the sales teams are uncapped, so they can earn a good chunk of money, and they're incredibly, incredibly good at what they do. They, you know, they live on their little black book. So I was meeting, you know, the C-level of most of the major businesses, retail businesses across America. And you're having incredibly productive conversations because my job was on the account side. I was owning the existing business. So they wouldn't see me as a salesperson, but really I was like, you need this other product, you need this product, you need this product. Oh, okay, okay. And because they didn't think of you as a salesperson, they'd listen to you more. Whereas a salesperson said that, I'd be like, you're just saying that because you're getting paid for it. And we got to a point, this is one of the best things I think we did there. we created a new segment. So retargeting is all about recency. It's about going to the site and I recently looked at this thing. And if I can get this other thing in front of you, you're probably in the buying motion, you'll buy it. But actually a cookie, which is what we used, lasts for 14 months. So there's an argument you could say, look, most people, Sears were great at this. They were like, most of our customers come to us once a year, and it's generally around Black Friday and around that time. If you can make that, you can increase that by, you know, a couple of percentage points, you make us a couple of billion dollars more. So we were like, well, why don't you think about this in the mid funnel? Why don't you target people who've been there before, but haven't been there for, you know, a year or more? Pay us a bit more per click, and we'll bring back users. And so this pitch was quite complicated. So we went round and we just used their whiteboards. You know, it was hilarious because you'd be in the room and you'd be like, we're not going to use a PowerPoint. Can we use that whiteboard? And they'd be like, nobody's used that whiteboard ever. Okay. and you'd immediately get into this. They were like at school. They'd sit down. They'd be like, oh, this is great. And you start drawing it and you'd take them on a journey. You know, you'd start drawing the funnel and this is it. And I would have myself, the head of BI, and our product person, who, by the way, had a PhD in astrophysics, which is crazy. And we'd all together do this pitch. And they, honestly, they were like, most of the time, they're like, that's the best pitch I've ever had because you've taken me on the journey and I completely understand what you're trying to achieve and I want to go with you.
And you're pulling out from them, you're pulling out their information to put on the whiteboard. So you're co-creating correct. Their solution. That
correct.
I think that that's the most powerful way to sell is if you can, because then it doesn't feel like you're being pitched. It feels like you've done this sort of value add. Like even if they don't buy, they know something about their business they didn't know before. You've turned up with an insight. You've co-created something with them. They're emotionally sold. They're not buying your solution. They're buying their solution for them. It's just very, very powerful.
Yeah, yeah, you're solving their big problems, you know, and that's the real key. And what I'm trying to galvanize our team at the moment is we've now been all supercharged by a new member of your team who's probably the brightest person in the building and in AI, you know. And what you can do now is you feed that AI the data and the insights and the problems the business you're about to talk to is trying to solve, and you ask it, how should I present that? And can you do it in a really simple way? And could you bullet point it? And can you, you know, and you work with it to a point you go in there and all of a sudden I hope the customer or the prospect is getting a solution we absolutely tailors to their needs. And we're finding that's actually really driving engagement and it's supercharging our teams and it's supercharging our customers. And it's a fascinating moment right now that we're in, I believe.
So which AI are you using inside Breathe?
So we have the Google Suite. So we are using Gemini and
Gemini Pro.
And it has all of our business data because we've obviously got it doesn't share anything. You know, we're ISO compliant. And I've never worked in a business that takes that so seriously, and rightly so, because obviously the data we're dealing with, you know, from HR perspective is some of the most important data a company could give you to look after. So we take compliance incredibly seriously. So what I love about Gemini is because it's a safe space for us, I can give it all of the insights and all of the data that I need to process. And it gives me some incredible insights. And so what I'm trying to say to the team, every time I meet the team, really, I want to get to a point where they all use Gemini for an hour every day, where they ask it questions, they come back and they re-ask it the same question in a different way. And then they get an output and say, look, get the output in one page, put it in bullet points, make it super easy to understand so you can share it, make it into a Slack message you could share, you know, make it do some of this hard stuff you're trying to solve, and it will grow with you and make you even better going forward. And it's a really interesting moment, I think. So yeah, I'm very excited about it.
I look back and think, you know, I joined Rackspace in 2001 and only a million people in the UK were online at that point. And, you know, it was pre-Google AdWords. And this feels like the same transformation is about to occur. You know, at that point, there were people going, I don't know why I need a website for my business, right? And people are still saying to me, I looked at ChatGPT, but it hallucinates. I don't know why I need AI. And it's like, whatever, no point in having this conversation with you. My job is not to persuade you to do a thing. Let me find somebody else more interesting to talk to. Have you got any early success stories where you've got a salesperson who has taken your advice and come back and gone, Phil, I can't believe it. It works.
It's sort of anecdotal, but I'm seeing we've set up a Slack channel where we get people to share, you know, the good stuff they've done on AI. And we're seeing salespeople who are doing exactly that, putting in more and more insights and getting delivered a unique pitch to the customer they're talking to. And it's resonating incredibly well. And what I want is I just want us to continue that because it makes your job more fun. Because when you go in and you talk to someone in an engaging way that they completely understand, they open up to you because, like, you're again solving some major problems they have. And so it takes away some of these blockers we sometimes have, because, you know, we know exactly what we're talking about in our business, but sometimes to articulate that to someone who's never really thought about it and only has, you know, half an hour to an hour to listen to you amongst a million other things they've got to do, you tell that to Gemini and they'll go, well, the best thing you should do is concentrate on these 3 points and reiterate those, because that's what they'll be most interested in. And that's what we're seeing.
In your sort of description of the challenge, you know, you were talking about changing regulation, but everyone's got something in place. So even if it's a spreadsheet to manage holiday, like, it's not as if people have nothing. Even small businesses have something in place. And so are you trying to displace something with your technology? So, you know, you're doing sales, right? Which is today, when whoever it was is the buyer is brushing their teeth, they weren't going, I know what I need to do. This is a thing I need to go buy. You're ringing them up and going, you weren't planning to buy this. It probably isn't in the budget, but actually for all of these reasons, you should have a conversation with us and we should persuade you to do a thing, which is actually selling as opposed to order taking.
Yeah, yeah, it is absolutely that. I mean, you know, Breathe, it deals with very, very small businesses, you know, down to single digit employees. And they are the ones who don't necessarily see the value in having, you know, to pay for a system, however cost effective that system is, because they haven't spent a lot of time thinking about the benefits of that. They're just running crazily around to try and grow their business, you know, and they're not thinking about annual reviews and they're not thinking about remuneration processes, because they are thinking, I've got to get the next deal done, as I don't have a business. So what is actually, I believe, going to help us is just the additional regulation that's coming in. And there's a great example we're talking to our employees about. There's a lot of mandatory training that must be done for employees of all businesses. And I would say we have a learning module, a learning add-on within our software, and we can see many small businesses don't take that on. Of the businesses we've spoken to, they're like, well, why do I need to do that? I didn't know there was this thing that you had to do. You know, totally unaware. And, you know, there's a really sad story in the news a couple of weeks ago about a haulage business which got hacked, you know, and they got ransomware. And basically, they got cut off from their data and they couldn't overcome that. And the business, unfortunately, collapsed. It was 147 years old. The reason they say they got hacked was because someone had a very basic password. And to be fair to them, too, they didn't want to call who that person was. But yeah, they said they had a very basic password, which was easily hacked, allowed them to get in.
It'll be the CEO, probably.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Yeah. And, and part of this mandatory training is cybersecurity. And so there's an argument to say, if you do this very basic thing in there, it tells you about password security and it says, don't have simple passwords. Don't use, you know, your wife's name or their date of birth, you know, do this. And that little bit of training, which won't cost you a lot of money, could have potentially helped. I'm not saying it would have solved the problem, but it may have helped them in some way. And that's what we want to get across to these businesses, is there's a reason the government makes this stuff mandatory, because it helps you. It can be a cruel world out there, you know, and there's hackers everywhere trying to disrupt stuff and there's all sorts going on. You need to help your employees. And that's just one area, you know, equality training is another real huge area. GDPR is another area. You know, all of these areas, if you're in business, you need to understand what you need to give your employees. And let's face it, it's your employees who are going to drive your business. It's your employees who are going to make you successful. So why not invest in them?
Let me interrupt the conversation just for a minute, because I don't want you to miss this. My new book, Mind Your Fucking Business, is out on Amazon. If you're thinking yet another business book, I think you're wrong. This is actually a blueprint to cutting through the noise and achieving unparalleled success for you. It's based on 10 years of business coaching, spotting similar problems that people have had, and coming up with real world solutions. If it's supercharging sales, if it's mastering talent acquisition, building a powerhouse brand, cultivating a company culture that breeds success, then this book is a ticket to your transformative journey. It's filled with practical tools and frameworks that I use every single day with my clients as part of their coaching program. If you want to take your business from good to great, look, you can go to Amazon and you can buy it, or you can click the link in the show notes and head over to monkhouseandcompany.com. I'll send it to you today. I'll send you a copy for free. I want to help you build a fantastic business. Now, back to the conversation.
Just to take you back slightly, you talked about using Gemini and the security frameworks you have in place at Breathe. I mean, I spoke to a CEO recently who said, I'm not sure I want to use AI because I don't want, in his case, OpenAI to be reading all my stuff. And I said to him, I said, look, honestly, you've got all your email with Microsoft. But you're not worried about Microsoft reading your email? I don't understand why is that conceptually different. So I'd love to get your sense on that. And then the other thing is, you said you wanted to get the salespeople or even all of your employees to be using AI an hour a day. And you said there was a Slack channel. And again, I think being specific and giving some examples to the listeners would be really, really helpful. So people can go, that's great. I'll take that idea from Phil. I'll go implement it this morning.
Oh, wow. So, look, I'm super passionate about this stuff, mainly because I've seen trends appear previously. So you talked about a million people being online in 2001. Well, yeah. I'll tell you a story. Back in 1985, right? That was a long time ago. I got asked, and I was very young, I'll say, right? I got asked by my parents what I wanted for Christmas. And I said, I'd just seen the film War Games. Right? Many of your listeners would be like, what the hell's that? It's a very old film. But it's all about modems. And I was like, I really want a modem. So my parents unsuspectingly bought me a modem. And then here I was online in 1985 doing email, and I was on this thing called Prestel, which was like, yeah, on TVs you had teletext. I'm talking to a certain generation here.
But it
was fascinating. There was a thing you could do where you could ask Paul Daniels, who at the time, big magician, very famous, you could ask him a question. We put a question and he answered our question. We were like, wow, this is amazing. So in 1985, I was like, this is going to change the world. Unfortunately for me, you had to dial up, and I lived in Northumberland and I had to dial into Newcastle. That became a national call rate. The first phone bill came in, and I kid you not, it was £400. And that modem disappeared quicker than you could say, don't you ever touch that again, because it got wrapped up and they were like, what on earth are you doing? You're never using that again. So I was really looking forward to like broadband and dial up and all the, you know, the stuff where they could actually, you could pay for it properly. But I got a sense of where the future was going way before it sort of happened. Cause I was like, this is connecting people and making, you know, transactions easier. So, I see AI as doing exactly the same. I see that as it's fundamentally going to change society going forward. And obviously there are negative connotations, and I think that's driven in many ways by a bit of we love a bit of dystopia in our films and our books, right? So I think we generally jump to Skynet and Terminator and, oh no, it's never going to work. But there's an opposite view of, imagine it solving maths and physics and medicine and, you know, and creating abundant energy and abundant opportunity for everyone. And I think this is this precipice we're on where it could fundamentally change what we're doing. So I am 100% bought into that. And also, I just see it solves a lot of your challenges, the way we communicate. You know, we have a ton of data we've got to digest every day. I heard a great stat the other day that we read more information in a day than someone in 1700 took in a year. You know, and that's only growing, right? So it's too much to digest. Now you have a tool where you just put it all in there and say, hey, summarize this for me. Give it to me this way. One of my favorite ones is, my daughter's 9. I'm like, explain it to me like I'm a 9-year-old. Fits beautifully with me. I'm like, I get to hear it all the time. So, you know, things we have done with it, for example, I'm looking at it from our engineers. And our engineers, coding is an interesting place right now, right? You're getting AI is starting to code. And you'll get many engineers who'll be like, yeah, but it doesn't write the code I write. And that is in many ways true. But what it is doing is getting better. And actually, it's going to get to a point where it's writing the code, full stop. And yet, you know, we have to QA it a little bit. That will diminish over time. It will start writing really good code. And what you can start doing now is you can start creating environments where you build in a visual environment of your product, and you can start addressing various product issues and then say, write the code to make that happen. It writes the code, you can QA it, and you can deliver that in the space of a week, when actually that would have taken you 2 to 3 months previously. Once that happens, you start delivering your roadmap unbelievably quickly, which means you can get onto the stuff that actually your customers are demanding you deliver today. Because most companies are dealing with infrastructure and, I've got to change this back end. The customer doesn't know that, nor do they care. What they want is the new shiny thing that helps them solve their problems, which, you know, generally goes on your roadmap and is delivered in, you know, 6 to 9 months time, if you're lucky, right? Or not, you know, ever. So what I want to get to is I want to solve our backlog as quickly as we can using AI. And I want us to then get onto the stuff that's going to affect the value we drive for our customers. And I think we can get there incredibly quickly.
Phil, you've inherited a company with a fantastic culture. What are some of the things that you think about, that this, your positivity and your vision that you bring to this, and go, how do I build on that? And maybe we wrap in some of the things we were talking about before we started recording, which is you've done some acquisitions and you've got some culture synergy that you're going to need to do as well.
It's interesting. We just recently bought this company, Rotageek. It's a phenomenal business set up by an A&E doctor who wanted to solve basically staffing issues in emergency wards. And he built this software to try and figure it out. The challenge wasn't the software. The challenge was selling it to the NHS, actually. And what he then found was, whilst it goes slowly to sell to the NHS, it went quickly to sell to customers like Nando's and Pret a Manger and the RAC. And before you know it, he had this pretty sizable business that was solving a lot of the staffing problems. Because really, staffing is all about, can you get your supply of staff to meet your demand at exactly the right moment so that service is seamless and you don't have to wait 25 minutes for your, you know, Nando's chicken burger. It comes to you within 5 or 10 minutes and you're really happy, right? And that's, or when you're broken down, the RAC engineer comes to you very quickly. You're not waiting 3 hours. And so this is what Rotageek solves for. And it's an amazing company. And what I'd also say, and give credit to K1, our private equity owners, they take culture incredibly seriously. So what we've done in the due diligence has really understood their culture. And when I met the Rotageek team, you're like, these are our people. You know, you get the similar sort of people that you're bringing together. The difference is Rotageek deals with very large enterprise businesses and Breathe deals with very small SMEs. And so it's a totally different flow. You know, the way you service a customer at Rotageek is completely different to the way you do it at Breed. So what we're finding is we've got a third company, which is called Elmo, which is our original owners from Australia. It's a really huge, sizable HR system built for businesses, I would say 100 to 1,000 employees, and actually can go much larger. And they sit in the middle, and we're just scaling that up in the UK. The beauty of Rotageek is it works across Elmo really well. So what happens is you've got customers around 200 employee mark actually really want to try and solve their rota issues. So previously, Rotageek was not selling to them because it was concentrating the very, very biggest accounts. So what we're doing is bringing them down market, and it helps Elmo go up market in terms of scale of businesses. So culturally, what I'm trying to do is just sort of meld together where there's crossover. And that particularly happens in the customer area. So, you know, to make sure we share best practice for customer and really in the marketing and sales areas as well as the other areas. The engineering sides are quite separate because they're building totally separate products on separate code bases. So that's where the cultural alignment is. And it is always, you know, it's never easy because you want to take everyone on the journey. And it takes a lot of communication. It takes a lot of explaining what you're doing, but I truly believe we can get there because we've got a fairly well formulated plan of what we want to achieve going forward. And we've explained that to the teams. I think mostly they've understood it. And what I'll do is we'll keep explaining it, right? Like, this is the key. Don't just tell them once, tell them five or six times. It's just mainly so they can understand from different angles and ask questions and so on. So, you know, I want them to buy it.
You will get bored of saying it before they've heard it enough. Are you philosophically, Phil, are you work from home, work from office? Where do you sit?
I went through the pandemic. So I worked for a gym software company called Mindbody through the pandemic. That was super tough because 95% of gyms closed. And by the way, they opened pubs before they opened gyms, which I'll never quite get over. but still, so, you know, we went from that working in the office to working at home the whole time. I work with people, you know, I manage a lot of people and I have teams that you need to work closely with. We are built for face-to-face interaction in my mind. So I really enjoy personally being in the office and talking to people face-to-face because you get the little nuances, you get the little conversations, you pick up the details, you get to engage emotionally with people much more so than Zoom. With my job, it's constant meetings. If I'm at home, I'll literally be sat in front of my computer for 8 hours without moving. You know, at least when I'm get coffee, you can go, you know, grab a bite to eat, you can walk around. So the way we do it at Breathe is we say 2.5 days in the office, which actually works quite well because the half day rolls over to 1 week you do two and the other week you do three. And that seems to give quite a nice balance to the team. Rotogeek's fully remote. So it's, you know, it's slightly different culture, but the teams, we'll start bringing them together. Breathe are based in Horsham and Rotogeek are in London. So, you know, we're going to sort of spin up the London office a bit more. And we have people who live in London who can now start using that, who work across Breathe as well. So that's how we'll deal with that. But personally, I'm in 4 days a week and I do a day at home, sort of catching up.
What do you think are the biggest challenges you're going to have to overcome in your vision? So what's your goal? 100 million turnover? Is that the sort of near-term goal to get to 100 million ARR?
No, I'd say nearer 50 million for now. Okay. Obviously, board would love 100 million. Yeah, that would be great, wouldn't it? But yeah, small steps going forward. So, I mean, our near-term challenges, right? Breathe is it's an SME business. So it's high velocity, you know, short timeframes. And you need to be on that business and really hitting the number every month, because once you fall behind, each deal is worth quite a small amount compared to the total. So you need a lot of deals additionally if you fall behind. So, you know, galvanizing the team to be on the plan and delivering so that we don't fall behind. And I've got to say they've done a fantastic job. We're in the first month of our new financial year because we work with an Australian company, so we do funny financial years that start in July. But the Breed team started like absolutely amazingly and is executing. And I think that's testimony to what we've really worked on a lot in my time is cross-collaboration. So trying to get my leadership team to cross-collaborate and then engaging their managers to do the same. And what I'm seeing is they're all starting to do that. And because of that, they're solving problems themselves and the leaders don't have to jump in and try and solve them for them. So that, I think, is really helping. So that started it well. The Elmo business and the Rotogeek business are much more bigger deals. So those deals take longer. So, longer sales cycle, takes a while to close. You've got more people involved. There's generally legals and so forth. So the sales cycle is a little bit longer, but, you know, you can miss one deal that falls out the quarter and you've totally sunk, or you get an extra deal in and everyone's, you know, cheering from the rooftop. So it's a bit up and down, and it's quite hard to manage those deals when you're dealing with an enormous business that needs multiple sign-offs. As much as you want to try and influence the speed of that decision making, it can be hard. So that's what I'm trying to figure is, you know, how do we increase the velocity of the deal making we're doing with those larger businesses? And really, you do it through, honestly, I had a chat with the lead of the implementation team at Rotogeek a couple of days ago, and I was like, do you use AI? He's like, not really. I was like, well, okay, well, let's have a think how we could use it. And really, it came from the fact that, well, we have ChatGPT, but I'm not sure I'm allowed to, you know. So it was empowering him, but actually has all the data. He has enormous willingness to do it. And I think it was just more letting the brakes off and go, just do it. Put all that data in there. Ask it to solve. How do we improve implementation for these businesses? How do we accelerate that? How do we get them online and going, you know, in half the time? Tell me what I should focus on. And it's, you can see they're like, oh, wow, imagine I knew the answer to that. I would be able to do my job so much better. And it's not about, that's not taking your job. That's meaning you are doing your job way more effectively. And I think that's what we're trying to solve for, is these little challenges. Let's break them down. Let's understand them. And let's execute on that as quick as we can, because that will improve all of us. You know, it's these marginal gains will sum up to an enormous shift in the business. And that's what we're aiming for.
I like to get people to think about AI as an assistant, right? And so often you give somebody an assistant, and if they don't know how to onboard an assistant, or like another, if you think about it as another human, like how would I give, if you're a manager, you've got used to managing other people and delegating. But if you're an employee and we've never asked you to train somebody else or codify your knowledge or think about the process that you go through, then you give them another human to share their workload. And you could just see that other person would just sit bored at the end of the desk, you know, week after week, not having got anything to do. Because you know that that's what happens when you do an onboarding program and you shadow people. It is the most boring week of your life, because you're sitting there going, I could be doing something. In fact, I've watched twice. I could do this quicker than you already, right? And so, you know, thinking about getting people to immerse themselves in AI and helping them understand where it can fit in, sharing those stories, inspiring, I think it's going to be really, really important. Phil, what books have you read along the way that have been useful, inspirational, that people should pick up?
Yeah, the number of different ones. When we were at Mindbody, it went through the entire business. I think someone somewhere must have read it was The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. And it was full of great insights, right? You know, like take the initiative, set your sights, you know, all of this sort of stuff, prioritize, cooperate, you know, communicate, collaborate, and so forth. And it's a lot of the stuff you find that the teams are naturally doing parts of, but not possibly doing all of it. So just having them read and just take a little bit of that book, I think, can help. I have a good friend of mine. His wife is a publisher, so she proofreads in tons of books. And she recommended to me many years ago The Underground Railroad, which is by Colson Whitehead. It's about America during the slave period. It's pretty hard hitting. I think it won a Pulitzer actually for that book.
Okay.
It's a really good book though. I mean, it's really incredibly well written. And it's about this fictitious Underground Railroad, which helped some of the people being oppressed at that time to escape. So yeah, really, that was a really good book. I do like a little bit of sci-fi, like I grew up with Michael Crichton, right? I remember when I first read Jurassic Park, it blew my mind. I loved all of that stuff. So recently I've been reading it's actually just been made into a series by Apple. It was Blake Crouch's Dark Matter, where it was the multiverse. So he created this machine that could jump between universes in the same area, so in Chicago, and you could jump between. And it was great because, like, you know, one day he'd be there and there'd be no humans. It would all be snowing and it would be, you know, crazy. And the next was like a perfect utopia of Chicago. You know, there was flying cars and everyone was happy. And, you know, and it was like, it was really, I just loved it because he kept playing with the different concepts of what life could be like, you know, from really terrible to really amazing to it just didn't appear. I loved that sort of stuff. So
fantastic. Phil, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you today. Thank you very much indeed for coming on.
Thank you very much. It's been great to talk to you. Appreciate it, Don.